This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 26th of January, 2017. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and Talking District newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. We'll begin with the usual regular notice, and the first is to say, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01 962 870 370. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or any of the, go back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces. www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order. The most recent is first on the list. And so let's look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Now on to the news. The leading headlines are Lifeline to Stop Respite Closure, Safety Fears Raised Over Plans for Notorious M3 Bottleneck, and Decision Day for Boomtown. And the first headline story is from Claire, please.
Lifeline to Stop Respite Closure. The decision to axe a children's respite centre is set to be challenged next week. As previously reported in the Chronicle, Hampshire County Council agreed to close Merridale in Kingsworthy, which cares for young people with learning disabilities. But a Liberal Democrat-led call-in is set to be discussed by the Children and Young People Select Committee on Tuesday to decide whether the closure should be reconsidered. Councillor Jackie Porter said the challenge was to ensure that every parent was satisfied that alternative arrangements were in place before it closed. Councillor Porter is leading a team of councillors, Malcolm Wade, Gavin James, Wayne Irish and Michael Westbrook, to call in the County Council decision to shut the centre on May 31st. An eight-week consultation in September, which also considered the future of Sunbeams in Aldershot, indicated the majority of respondents, 87%, had strong concern about the closure of Merridale. But last week, the decision was made by Executive Lead Member for Children's Services Keith Manns, following a vote in favour of the recommendation by the Children and Young People Select Committee, which was met with shouts of shame from the public. Councillor Porter said, "We were appalled to hear that although 87% of respondents to the consultation had disagreed with the closure of the two centres, their view was considered not to be so relevant because bosses felt they didn't understand the alternatives would be better. We know that respite care is so precious to parents and siblings. We want to make sure there is no break in provision and that parents don't miss out on money or time. The call-in asks for a guarantee on these points for current users. We had hoped for cross-party support for this, but I believe that the Conservatives are so keen to see the Merivale site cleared for development that they are ignoring the plight of families and children using it. Cornerways has been empty for more than 4 years, with adults waiting to get out of hospital and others in need of housing. It is terrible to see empty accommodation going to waste. On decision day, Councillor Manns said a regular report was to be produced showing whether parents had found suitable alternative accommodation, including transport provision. He said, "I believe that the children and families needing respite care should receive the best possible support that we can offer within the funding that is available. There are substantial costs associated with keeping these buildings and facilities up to standard and fit for purpose, and it is my view that this money can be put to better use. I am reassured that the 35 children and their families who will be directly affected by this decision will continue to have access to overnight residential respite care from a range of high-quality independent providers. In the new service model, they will also have the opportunity to select other types of respite care to provide them with the breaks that they need, and that will suit them best, just like many other children with disabilities in Hampshire." Councillor Manns added, "While I acknowledge that some of those families will be disappointed with this decision, I am confident that they will be able to agree with their social worker a new and alternative package of respite care that will continue to meet their particular needs. This will include a carefully managed transition plan that will help the children and their families to adjust as comfortably and conveniently as possible to any changes. Reviewing how children's services are delivered is part of the County Council's work to maintain vital services amid ongoing and significant financial pressures. We have had to make some very difficult decisions resulting from reduced funding from central government and growing demand for services. This decision has been no exception." Gail Bedding, CEO of Hampshire Parent Carer Network, said, "We applaud the County Council for including us in discussions about the remodelling of overnight respite from the beginning. We were glad to be asked for our opinions because we are the experts. We live and breathe this life. Sadly, no one has listened to our views. We made it clear that parents would want to be clear about other options before agreeing to closures, not afterwards. But Hampshire has now said that they will close Merivale and Sunbeams with no clear alternative strategy in place."
Safety fears raised over plans for notorious M3 bottleneck. A traffic expert has expressed concern about part of the proposed design for relieving congestion at one of Winchester's worst bottlenecks. As reported in the Chronicle, Highways England wants to carry out major work to the M3 Junction 9, where the M3 meets the A34, and has developed a scheme set to cost around £100 million. It'll be redesigned to create dedicated free-flow lanes, allowing drivers travelling between the M3 and the A34 to avoid using the junction roundabout. The roundabout itself would be redesigned into a dumbbell layout, which, while improved pedestrian and cycling routes, will complete the gap in the national cycling network. Part of the scheme is to maintain a right-hand slip road to the A33 from the A34, but this will involve traffic merging into a stream and moving across lanes to go off to the right. However, recently retired head of public affairs at the AA, Paul Watters, said this could cause complications. He said, "There's quite a lot of weaving, and that's notoriously difficult when there are high speeds. It depends if there's a speed restriction or not." When asked about maintaining the right-hand A33 slip road, whether that would pose a risk to drivers, Mr. Watters replied, It's possible it might be. For people on the A34, they'd need to be conscious of traffic joining from Winchester Roundabout and people moving across. It adds a complexity to the highways authority would want to do something about. It will be fully risk assessed, and it's down to drivers to be observant and also good signage and gantry over the road. It's early days for the design, but it does add complications. Also speaking about the scheme, Councillor Jackie Porter said the southbound lane from the A33 has the M3 slip coming in from the left to join the A33 traffic, and the A33 traffic has to cross the M3 lane if it's going ahead or left. People watching the video, shared by Highways England, are concerned that the local traffic will have to feed into the M3 traffic in such a short time before the junction, and will have already crossed or joined lanes of fast traffic from the A34, feeling rather like a tortoise running into a chicane of motorway speed hares. I'm urging the public to express this concern to the Highways England team. We're also painting out how well used the A33 bike and walk path is, and would like it to be restored to a full cycle path right through to the Cart and Horses Junction. The public has a way of seeing things that the highway engineers don't, so I welcome all comments that could redefine what looks in principle like an innovative scheme. The plan was originally delayed by Highways bosses to avoid a clash with other schemes it's running. It was due to start in March 2020, but was pushed back to mid-2021. It's set to be fully open to traffic by 2023. Public consultation events will be held on January the 27th at Winchester Guildhall, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m, and on January the 31st, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. February the 10th at Winnell Community Centre, February the 16th at Kingsworthy Community Centre, and the deadline for responses is February the 19th.
Decision Day for Boomtown. The future of the Boomtown Fair is set to be decided by city councillors. Organisers of the festival at Matterley Bowl want to increase its capacity to 80,000 by 2019. Approval of their application would see the numbers of attendees rise to 76,000 for the next event to be held in August 2018, before allowing a further 4,000 music fans to attend in 2019. In 2017, the annual festival attracted around 60,000 people through its gates. Residents are concerned about increased traffic, as well as noise pollution and the detrimental impact the festival has on local businesses. But organisers have said they are confident that they could deliver the show without increasing the impact on the local area. The application received 91 representations, 88 of which were objections. At a drop-in session held by the organisers and Winchester City Council's licensing department, Boomtown Community Liaison Officer Caroline Johnson said that they were doing everything they could to minimise disruption, including using acoustic barriers to try and minimise sound leaving the venue. If you look at the amount of noise complaints compared to 22, the number of complaints has gone down and keeps going down year on year, she added. Boomtown has announced the world-famous alternative rock band Gorillaz as the first headline act for the 2018 festival, which will mark Boomtown's 10th anniversary. However, the festival has come under fire in recent years following a number of drug-related deaths. Winchester City Council will make their decision on the plans at Licensing Subcommittee on Friday, January the 26th.
And we move on now to death notices. And the first is Val Burton, Valerie Burton, who passed away peacefully on the 6th of January in her 90th year. I'd just like to say a word about Valerie. She was a founder member of Winchester Talking newspaper and devoted a great deal of her time to keeping good standards and recruiting readers and all the other support staff that make this Talking newspaper happen. She was indeed a very remarkable lady. So that's Val Burton.
Cannon, Nancy Cannon, peacefully on the 15th of January, aged 99.
Farrell, John McClurg Farrell, sadly passed away on the 9th of January, aged 89 years.
Fiedler, Commander Robert James Fiedler, MBERN retired, died peacefully on 20th of January, aged 87 years.
Goodchild, Hilda Edith Goodchild, sadly passed away on the 12th of January, aged 86 years.
Green, Diane Di Green, peacefully in hospital on 5th of January, aged 81.
Hambridge, George Wilfred Hambridge, passed away peacefully on the 21st of December 2017, aged 94.
Hannon, Queenie, nay Harry Hannon, passed away peacefully on the 16th of January.
Hatt, Ivy Ann Hatt, passed on 19th of January, aged 103 years.
Lowe, Mary Lowe, on 12th January, aged 66.
Matthews, Eileen Matthews, passed away peacefully on the 15th of January, aged 88 years.
McKenna, Daisy McKenna, formerly of Stanmore, peacefully on 13th of January, in her 91st year.
Morris, Richard Morris, passed away peacefully on his 82nd birthday.
Nicholson, Edward James, Jim Nicholson, passed away on 15th January, aged 76.
Pearl, Edina Rosemary, Peggy Pearl, passed away on the 15th of January at the Grange Care Home, aged 96 years.
Reed, Martin Reed, MBE, on 13th of January, aged 69.
Russell, Edith Ginny Russell, née Carter, passed peacefully, aged 95 years.
Stead, Peter Allen Stead, aged 91 years, peacefully on 11th January.
Tong, Hazel Marie Tong, passed away on the 15th of January, aged 88.
Wheeler, Mark Wheeler, on 22nd of January, aged 61, after a brave battle with cancer.
Woodley, Trevor Woodley, passed away suddenly after a short illness, aged 65 years. So next we have Christian Comment, and it's contributed by Liz Tatham this week. Claire, would you read this one for us, please?
She has headed it, Remembering a Blessed Time of Year. How was your Christmas? Yes, a month really has gone by, and only 11 more until the next one comes around. Ours was typically very busy, full of food, family and friends. Christmas has always felt like a blessed time of year, for as long as I can remember. It's not just because of the excitement of the festive elements, but because of its meaning. The wonder of heaven and earth being mixed up in a stable, not my words, but I do like them, have always drawn me to the peace, quiet and light in that place at Bethlehem, God becoming human in every way. The image of that stable, be it in pictures, words, cribs or Christmas carols, never fails to send a shiver of wonder through me. This last Christmas brought more than we had bargained for, as one of our many and most welcome guests may have brought an unwelcome bug. We were temporarily slowed down for a few days by something unpleasant. But we locked ourselves in, slept, played games, chatted. It was quite relaxing. However, one of us then became rather ill with something else and didn't get better. At one point, I was so concerned for my loved one that I sent out an SOS to a few friends, who I think of as prayer warriors. I can rely on them to pray when I ask, and I believe they are heard. I knew they would respond with their usual generosity, and felt some relief from the anxiety for a night as we waited to see if the combination of some new antibiotics and prayer would do the trick. The following morning, our poor patient woke and said, "I'm hungry." It made me smile, not just with relief, but it reminded me instantly of the gospel narrative which tells of Jesus healing a young girl, Mark 5:21-43. After she rises from her deathbed, he commands the family to give her something to eat. I used to wonder about that, but now I see that very sick people don't or can't eat, and so become very weak. Jesus was not just involved in our spiritual health, but the very basics of our bodily well-being too. God became human in every way, even down to reminding us to eat. So, my resolutions are made for a quieter Christmas next year. But as the time draws closer, I know we will invite people who we love or who are alone, as many of us do at that time, so hospitable time of year, and the house will be once again be full. However, I'm going to make time, whenever I can, to go and sit in the quiet stable just outside Bethlehem and ponder. You're welcome to join me, if you'd like. And that was by Liz Tatham.
Thank you, Claire. Going on to letters to the editor. And from a very bit mixed bag of letters this week, we've selected 9 for you. Richard will start it off with the first, please. Thank you.
And the first one refers back to that leading story about the M3 proposals. It's called M3 Plan Problems and comes from Roger Mallin. So let's think ahead. Once again, Highways England has gone for a short-term approach to fix the severe traffic congestion at the A34 M3 junction. None of the 3 options at Winnall, Junction 9, will resolve the other issues on the M3 around Winchester, including the fact that it is already very heavily congested and poorly designed, with steep undulations that HGVs have difficulty in negotiating. This regularly causes further congestion at Twyford and Shawford, and will only get worse with the increased flow of traffic into these locations at peak times. Better than £100 million was put towards a new road diverting the A34 west of Winchester directly onto the M271 and M27 at Southampton, leaving the original as a link to the M3. This would remove the Midlands traffic from the M3 and the M27, as makes up the majority of the heavy goods traffic currently heading for Southampton docks. It would also act as a relief road to the M3, in the rare event of it being blocked, and for once we would be ahead of the game. I appreciate this is a radical approach, but its construction would cause negligible disturbance to the existing traffic flows during the construction period and would probably be quicker to build. Also, so far as I can see, there'd be no major obstacles unless you take the green option of tunnelling under the high ground to the west of Winchester. This route would also be shorter, faster, easier graded, thus not so liable to congestion, produce far less pollution and save money. I appreciate such a road would not go down well in Hursley and Littleton, but motorway design has come a long way in the last 60 years, so they'd be much more environmentally friendly. Mind you, I can appreciate Highway England's mindset when one looks back to the planning problems beset the building of the M3 around Winchester. With our exit from Europe, we will be relying on exports to new markets through an ever-expanding Southampton docks for our financial survival, and having them stuck on overburdened roads will not help. Let's face it, Hampshire doesn't want the traffic, and I'm pretty sure the feeling's mutual, so let's do something positive to help it on its way. Roger Mallin, Goring Field Week, Winchester.
This letter from Piers Ruff is on the same subject. While generally welcoming Highway England's proposals for improvements at Junction 9 of the M3, I share the concerns expressed by Stephen Cann in the Chronicle on January the 18th and John Lee, also in the Chronicle on January the 18th, about the substandard weaving length on the northbound A34 for journeys from the Winnell roundabout to the A33. To address this issue, I would like to suggest two possible alternative modifications to HE's preferred option 14. The first is a realigned northbound A34 bridging the A33 link, similar to HE's option 11, combined with a southbound A34 alignment close to that of option 14. This southbound alignment would be less intrusive on the Itchen Valley than option 11. My second, less costly alternative, whilst retaining the offside A33 divergence, would increase the weaving length on its approach by relocating the slip road from the Winnell roundabout instead of following the existing A34, as proposed by HE. This slip road would join the new northbound A34 farther south by following the line of the existing M3 northbound onslip. Access from Winnell to the northbound M3, meanwhile, would follow the alignment of HE's preferred option 14, Piers Rough, Cumberland Close, Chandler's Ford.
Another letter on the same subject. Sir, if the new junction is built as currently proposed, how will traffic from Eastern Lane access the A33 northbound? Or in other words, how will you get from Tesco to Kingsworthy? You will have to join the newly remodelled A34 on a standard left side on slip, but then move into the right lane within a few hundred yards to exit again by a highly unusual right side off slip. The A34 will not have been slowed by a roundabout, so the slow local traffic will have to merge into both lanes of the fast trunk route. If you agree that the proposal is bad, or even downright dangerous, please make sure your view is made known by at least completing the survey form available online. Search, and this is little m 3 little j 9, improvement on Google or at local information centres. Steve Barber, Oaklands, South Wanston.
And whilst we're thinking about traffic, David Selby thinks there's a lack of clear plan. Some time ago, I produced a short paper as a contribution to the consultation on a movement strategy, and in it suggested that the designation and utilisation of available space for development should be a key consideration in any movement strategy. Questions might be posed such as, do we want office accommodation in the city, together with an increase in large retail enterprises and hotels? All of these would contribute to an increase in vehicular movement by both commercial vehicles and private cars in the city itself. The City Council seems to react to the request of developers, such as housing estates sprawling into the countryside, the Travelodge proposal taking advantage of an empty shop, North Winchester Farm proposing 4,200 square metres of commercial floor space. Does Winchester City Council have a clear plan of how available space should be used for particular functions and how those functions would impinge on a viable, pollution-free movement strategy? Travelodge, therefore, might or might not fit into such a strategy. Only last week I heard a spokesman for the Local Government Association, to which both Winchester and Hampshire councils presumably belong, talk about the designation of space for certain functions. On page 52 of the Central Winchester Regeneration document, there's a diagram illustrating the possible juxtaposition of the various functions discussed above. This, however, only applies to Silver Hill, but could be applied to the city as a whole. It might be helpful to a movement strategy, therefore, if there was a pause in any further development of the big projects like Silver Hill, Station Approach, the new leisure centre, and any further large-scale housing development, to assess the traffic movement forecast according to the functions proposed and its effect on life and pollution in the city. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
I suppose this is sort of about traffic as well, stationary traffic. And it comes from Councillor Roy Perry. Your editorial comment, together with a published letter in the Chronicle January the 11th, suggested that Hampshire County Council's staff car park at Bar End be used as a coach car park by Winchester City Council, instead of the nearby site used for BMX trails. With regard to this site, I would like to reiterate that the County Council is in the early stages of discussions with the City Council and BMX community about a possible solution in the future. However, no decisions have been made, and many factors must first be considered before any formal proposals are put forward. The County Council has previously reduced its parking provision in the city as part of work to reduce and rationalise office numbers and deliver savings. As we find a long-term use of Bar End rather than leave the site empty, it's been more practical and economical to continue to use it for staff car parking. This also helps to relieve pressure on Winchester's Park and Ride, ease congestion and reduce vehicle emissions. Winchester City Council's park and ride buses are used to support this facility. Spaces at the site are shared and based on operational and business need. Priority is given to staff who use their vehicles for County Council business, particularly those delivering vital frontline services such as social care to the growing numbers of the county's vulnerable children and adults. This criteria also applies to spaces in the basement of Tower Street Car Park, which also provide a facility for other staff visiting and working at the County Council, including blue badge holders, contractors, and workers who often require parking at intermittent times, including outside of normal business hours. I would like to reassure your readers that the County Council regularly reviews its parking spaces to ensure that they continue to be used in the most appropriate way to support the delivery of important public services to the people of Hampshire. Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester. And the letter editor's note says, this was written prior to the latest update on page 5 of the Chronicle.
Now, lest your appetite for items about traffic and planning not yet satisfied, Phil Yates says, good idea, but what about the parking? I will not be one of those who may sniff at the proposal for a budget hotel in the form of Travelodge to move into the next premises in the High Street. It will financially assist some visitors of the city, but my only concern is the usual problem, car parking. The Colebrook Street car park gets full most days by early morning. Your editorial comment also wonders what letters were written to the Chronicle when the Black Swan Hotel and the George Hotel were demolished in 1934 and 1956 respectively. I can imagine there were some objections, but they had to go for road widening and redevelopment purposes. I remember policemen in white jackets standing on rubber mats control the traffic coming out of Southgate Street into Jury Street and vice versa before traffic lights were installed in 1936. My wife and I witnessed the demolition of the George Hotel in 1956 as we resided in the flat opposite. We were the receivers of most of the dust. We saw Jury Street and George's Street widened and the erection of Barclays Bank, which opened in 1959. Happy days. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Enlightened Trust. How enlightened of the Hampshire Cultural Trust to replace specialist subject curators with culturally experienced roles, Chronicle January 18th. I'm sure that we all feel that our heritage is now in very safe hands. Perhaps we could also save some money in the NHS by replacing our specialist doctors and nurses with health experienced roles. After all, as one of Steve Brine's close colleagues commented, I think that the people of the county have had enough of experts. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
Our next letter is headed Prisons Shame and comes from the Reverend Paul A. Newman. Our local prison is now officially among many in special measures, reported in the Chronicle January the 18th. A fatuous euphemism covering a multitude of sins, often political in origin. During 21 years' employment in Her Majesty's Prison Service, I never forgot that we served the public by keeping in custody those committed by the courts, but that it was also our duty to look after them with humanity and help them lead law-abiding and useful lives in custody and after release. I reminded myself, and occasionally other colleagues too, that the public included prisoners' relatives, other civilians, the victims of crime, and no less prisoners themselves, all being stakeholders. The idea was that of a responsible prisoner, a rehabilitating priority gesturing towards a possible restorative justice in a responsible society. In the shadow of the current state of affairs around the prison's estate and in probation, I feel ashamed of my past association. It confirms for me, and doubtless our elected representatives, how little public concern, interest, or obviously votes surround the scandalous situation that has become the norm across the prison's estate in recent years. Such public disinterest or ignorance well serves our Ministry of Justice, as it did a previous Secretary of State, even now infamous for his insouciant complacency. The repeated trope of changing lead governors amounts to passing the parcel as each one grapples for a time with the same intractable conditions. Kick-ass does not deliver turnarounds when the capacity, morale, and indeed viability of a prison has deteriorated year on year with degrading conditions for prisoners and staff. Perhaps it is really the Ministry of Justice that has become not fit for purpose and invites the fatuous euphemism, special measures. Reverend Paul A. Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Jerry, and everyone. We're moving on now to your say, and is Jerry again with an opinion. William H. Macy said at a Hollywood award ceremony, "It's hard to be a man these days." So the Chronicle's roving reporter asked people what they thought about that. Thanks, Jerry.
And Katie Gallagher, 31, a police officer and mother, originally from Winchester, living in Newbury, said, "I don't think they have it tougher than any woman. Life's a bit difficult for a lot of people at the moment, trying to make ends meet. It's a different generation." And Ross Baird, 26, environmental advisor from WEEK, said, "I don't think men have it particularly tough. There's different struggles for different people. I would like to think we are all working for a more equal society." Laura Grimes, 20, a student from Winnall, said, "There are issues that all genders find tough, but I think it's disproportionate towards women. But men have their own issues, such as body image and high rates of suicide, which are not tackled enough." And Lee Thwaire White, 19, student of Burma Road, Winchester, said, "There's truth to it. There's inequality with sexism, but also I think men are not to feel emotional, and there's toxic masculinity, especially in TV and films. To stand up and say so is quite brave."
Well, good opinions. Really, really interesting. We're going to move on now to Chronicle comment, but before that I'd just like to ask if you know that if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or you can email on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and that is all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. You could even drop in when you're in Winchester if you'd like to. And we have the comment from the Chronicle editor now, which is not surprisingly headed, "The fatal flaw in the 100 million Junction 9 plan." Put aside the fact that the solving of the Winnall Junction 9 bottleneck is likely to cause a new bottleneck further down the road in Southampton, the improvement of the junction at Winchester will increase the capacity of the road and thus place pressure somewhere else on the network. Amid the general positive reaction to the news that the £100 million is set to be spent at Winnall, there is a detail that should not be overlooked. Traffic from Winnall roundabout, aiming to join the A33 northbound just south of the Cart and Horses, will have to cross two lanes of high-speed traffic in a very short distance. Simply put, there will, sooner or later, be a serious accident. Then another. And another. At the moment, the traffic going on to the A34 and then aiming to join the A31 has around half a mile to get into that position, across only two lanes, and usually the speed of the traffic has been slowed by having to stop at Winnall roundabout. What the Highways Agency is proposing is that the traffic will join a high-speed, two-lane dual carriageway, with the traffic going at 70 miles an hour, although in reality much faster, then almost immediately have to swerve across those lanes. There either needs to be some serious engineering work or the removal of the option to go north onto the A33. Over to you, Highways England. The first person is the next item this week, and it's contributed by Ron Allison with the header, "Time waits for no man." Richard, will you take this one on, please?
With pleasure. Earlier this month, my wife and I, Jennifer, sat happily in St Stephen's Church in Twickenham as our three great-grandchildren were dedicated to God. 2 days later, I was at Guildford Crematorium, where a service was held to celebrate the life of one of my oldest friends, who, as it happened, had died on Christmas Day. This was, of course, in many ways a sad event, but also the chance to remember and be thankful for the impressively full and generous life of Rex. Since then, the contrast between the two celebrations has remained with me. At one, we were effectively looking ahead. At the other, it was a case of recalling, in part at least, such a very different world. As my generation grew up in pre-war England, we're talking of some 80 years ago, the homes we lived in were probably not worth the attention of your average burglar. Not that we were poor. Both Rex's and my own father were schoolteachers. But beyond the basic household bits and pieces, there was little of other than personal value. My mother had some rings and necklaces. I had my dinky toys and a railway set. And oh, yes, books. But everybody items now to be found in so many of our homes? Not a glimmer. There was no portable radio, no television set, no expensive cameras. We had a box brownie. No laptops, no CDs, mobile phones. No phone at all. Although they did have one over the road. That was all we needed. Nothing much for smash-and-grab merchants. And as to the house itself, comfortable, well-kept, but not warmed by central heating. At the back, the coal shed was next to the larder, the coolest room in the house. Not a refrigerator in our immediate neighbourhood. There were three bikes in the garage, though alongside a standard 10 car, which had seen a few owners before it arrived in our lives. despite what may now seem to some as a not particularly special way of life, that is what it was. Loving parents, good neighbours, good schools, local shops, daily deliveries, if wanted, of milk, bread and other groceries, meat and once or twice a week fish. Newspapers were delivered too, morning and evening, but if you wanted anything from a shop, remember to get it by Saturday. No shops opened on Sunday. Of course, things were changing all the time, and the war drastically altered all our lives for 5 years or more. But that's another and different story. So looking ahead to the future for Isla, Millie and Henry, the world they now live in is already so very different from the one in which most of you reading this grew up. They don't know much about it yet, but by the time they do become aware of life around them, it will have moved again on a pace. I've long since given up on understanding the majority of today's gizmos and gadgets, but if I was able to cope, I know I would relish many of them, as I do this computer, rather than my old portable typewriter. It travelled well, though. So into the world of information technology and artificial intelligence they will emerge, and the ways in which they entertain themselves and relate to each other will be so different to our own experiences. What exactly I cannot predict with any authority or insight, but I believe that far more important than a grasp of the latest piece of technology is that they will be brought up surrounded by love. That their home is a Christian home, so that will be the foundation on which their lives will be built. It's good being a great-grandfather.
And we are going to move on now to Belgarum. Claire has the first, please.
The more things change. Here's an interesting quote from the recently published Winchester British Historic Towns Atlas, Volume 6. Winchester was beset by economic and social problems. Numerous people, mainly destitute, migrated to the city, providing a challenge for the city authorities. Antisocial beggars in the 21st century? No, Winchester in the late 16th century. More from the Atlas in the coming weeks.
Deja Vu, another sofa shop for Jury Street. Many Belgarum readers will have noticed that Multi-York Furniture Shop on Jury Street announced it was closing earlier this month after the company went into administration. It is surprising then that Sofa Workshop, another furniture chain, are set to take over the unit. While Multi-York's fate has little bearing on how Sofa Workshop will fare, it is interesting that simply another furniture shop will move into the space when something fresh might have been the way to go. Ah, only time will tell.
And another one. This is headed Presentation Problems. A Winchester City Councillor apologised after criticising a planning officer's presentation, despite the fact she had stepped in to cover a colleague at the last minute. Councillor Frank Pearson was addressing the planning committee last Thursday over plans to build a new access road in Hole Lane, Hambledon. The planning officer, who had only seen the report that morning, as the assigned officer was unable to attend the meeting, presented the proposals and outlined a recommendation to reject the application. Councillor Pearson made a throwaway comment about the quality of the presentation, with some members looking shocked at the remark. Councillor Therese Evans criticised Councillor Pearson, while Councillor Ian Tate said, "I thought the explanation was helpful, and I found the presentation excellent." Councillor Pearson clarified that he only meant to draw attention to planning policies not addressed in the presentation and apologised to the planning officer as they left the meeting. The plans for the access track were unanimously rejected by the committee.
And next is a letter from Westminster, and it's contributed by Steve Brine. Richard, please.
There's been discussion in recent weeks of Boomtown Fair and plans to increase the size of the festival over the next 2 years. I remain a supporter of Boomtown, which, let's remember, takes place over one long weekend once a year. I declare an interest in that I'm a festival goer myself, having attended Glastonbury and others since I was quite young. But I hope that's given me a balanced view and a level of insight into what really goes on. Bottom line, I think we should see the whole picture when forming an opinion. First and foremost, we were all teenagers once, and thousands of young people living locally safely enjoy Boomtown and the opportunity to see acts such as the Gorillaz, Ziggy Marley and the Specials just up the road. Secondly, Boomtown adds significantly to the local economy as thousands of visitors come to the city and spend their money. Festivals are big business these days, and we should recognise that. At Matterley, we have one of the best festival sites in southern England. Third, Boomtown is, quite properly, subject to very stringent licensing and noise regulation via Winchester City Council. Having spent time on the site in the central control room, I know they are clear how seriously we in the local community view the terms of their licence and how we expect it to be adhered to in both the spirit and letter of the law. And then there's money, which reminds me, Boomtown has to date raised some £32,000 for local charities and organisations, including the Air Ambulance, Trinity, Naomi House and Street Search, as well as smaller sums for others. We should all, especially those in receipt of the big sums, be careful not to pop up on TV criticising with one hand while we're taking the Boomtown shilling with the other. Finally, drugs. And I do not for one moment skirt over the dangers of the tragic deaths we've seen at Boomtown in previous years. I've young children myself and I've spoken to parents who've lost children. But I don't believe the problem will go ahead if we bury our heads in the sand or move the festival elsewhere. As the local MP and as the Public Health Minister, I'm glad the organisers are committed to working on ways we can use an event that captures the attention of young people in a way we cannot, to talk frankly about the dangers of drug use. The recent film, Boomtown, released about their harm reduction programme and on-site loop testing programme, was a landmark piece of work. I think there's now a huge evolution in the festival world and a chance for it to step up and finally realise the public health potential of our growing festival industry.
Thank you very much, Richard. We move on now to historical items. These are the usual mini news clips, and starting with 200 years. 200 years ago, Monday, January the 26th, 1818. On Thursday morning, about 6 o'clock, a barley rick was discovered to be on fire at Mr. J.S. Hollis's at Timsbury Farm, and which was entirely consumed. But providentially, it was at a sufficient distance from the rick yard as to be confined to the rick only, and the property is insured. There is no doubt that it being the diabolical act of an incendiary, as a man was seen near the rick just before the fire broke out, and soon afterwards on another part of the farm, running fast under a hedge. There is great hopes, however, of the villain being discovered. 20 guineas have been offered for the apprehension of the offender. Second item, 200 years ago. At a meeting of several gentlemen inhabitants of a Southampton and parishes meeting held at Guildhall, Southampton, on the 13th day of January 1818, it was resolved that the deprivation of gypsies and other vagabonds, having no means of obtaining a livelihood except by theft and plunder, have increased to so serious a degree that it is necessarily more strict to enforce the existing laws for the for the prosecution and apprehension of such offenders. The above object can only be accomplished by an association and cooperation of adjoining parishes engaging to enforce the strict penalties of the law against all persons offending in their respective districts. Jerry.
100 years ago, Saturday, January the 26th, 1918. The APC Winchester Entertainers gave another concert on Friday in the last week when a visit was paid to the YMCA hut at Mourne Hill Camp. Despite the bad weather, there was a good attendance and the men thoroughly enjoyed the entertainment. The party have added to their repertoire in such a way as to considerably enhance their reputation. The company have been invited to Avington Camp, where the genial YMCA manager has offered them a hearty welcome. A special programme is being arranged for this visit. And the second item says, under the auspices of the Winchester War Economy Committee, Mrs. Hal Martin of the Ministry of Food gave an address at the Guildhall on Wednesday on the subject of food in wartime. The meeting was arranged especially with the object of enlisting the sympathy and help of women engaged in domestic service, and an appeal was made to mistresses to facilitate the attendance of those in their employment. She remarked from the outset that the Ministry of Food was anxious that everyone in the country should know what that ministry were trying to do and how they were trying to do it, because Lord Rhondda felt certain that if the people in this country could understand the intimate connection between the proper use and a proper conservation of our food supply, they would be one and all, heart and soul, with him.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, January the 27th, 1968. Hampshire County Council stated on Tuesday that they had no objection to the immediate development of a 5.5-acre site on the southwest edge of Badger Farm, 1.5 miles from the centre of Winchester. They said this at a ministerial inquiry held in Winchester into an application for permission to go ahead with the residential development of the land off Compton Way, Oliver's Battery. The application was made by Hampshire Contractors Limited of Winnell, Winchester. One of the main problems in the development of the Badger Farm complex as a whole was the final siting of the main distributor road, which would run through the centre of the development, linking the A34 with the A31. And secondly, the Hampshire Executive Council of the National Health Service were told at Winchester on Friday last week that Winchester doctors would not sign an agreement to use the proposed health centre at Friars Gate until they were given some idea of how much it would cost them to use the centre. Hampshire County Council had informed them through their solicitor that they were not prepared to give an estimate in advance. Dr. R.G. Gibson of Winchester said, "We're not going to get rid of our present accommodation to move into a new building without knowing what the cost of it's going to be. We may well decide that in order to give our patients a better service, we will pay more, but we must have some idea of what it's going to be."
25 years ago, Friday, January the 29th, 1993. A decision to charge £1 entrance fee at Winchester's City Museum could drive away customers, fear opponents of the scheme. Cash-strapped Winchester City Council is introducing the charge from April in a bid to raise around £10,000. But worried councillors say thousands of visitors will turn around at the museum door in the square when they see they have to pay to peek at the artefacts. A City Council Leisure, Arts and Community Committee voted to back the charge, which will be introduced from April the 1st. Museum curator Liz Lewis felt it was the only way to make savings. A visitor survey had also shown few people would be against it. And the second part of this, the reward being offered for information that leads police to the sadistic attacker or attackers responsible for the death of a horse at Four Marks has risen to £16,000. The 12-year-old mayor, the latest victim in a series of 23 assaults in Hampshire, was the first to die at the scene. A further 8 have been injured in similar incidents in surrounding counties. Police have urged horse owners to be vigilant after the vicious attack on Mountbatten, a dark Hunter bay mare, in her stable at Cobb's Farm, Four Marks. Owner Robert Broderick found Mountbatten lying dead in a pool of blood in her stable on Hawthorne Lane on Saturday morning.
Let's lighten the subject a little bit by moving on to what's on in the area for the next couple of weeks. I'm going to start with talks. One thing appealed to me when I saw it in the paper was Tuesday, February the 13th, Steve McHugh, fantasy author, Hampshire Writers Society talk. It's at the Stripe Theatre, University of Winchester, in Sparkford Road, in Winchester SO224NR, at 7 p.m. for 7:30. Steve McHugh, author of a series of fantasy books, talks about writing, planning, and setting up a series of novels. Special guest Caroline Routh, and the monthly competition results are going to be written on in a dark scene in a fantasy world, 300 words. The annual sub of this group is £30, and you can read about them on the net on www.hampshirewriterssociety.co.uk. www.hampshirewriterssociety.co.uk. All lowercase, no spaces. Another event that turned up much to my interest was the Mayor of Winchester's Quiz Night, and that's going to be at the Guildhall, Broadway, Winchester, SO23 9GH. The time is from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. and it's in aid of the Mayor's charities. It's £12 per person, and the Tourism Information Centre can give you tickets or tell you more about it. It's 01962 840 500, 01962 840 500. And so what's on stage? Well, at the Plaza Theatre, Romsey, they've still got a pantomime. They're doing Aladdin on Fridays, Saturdays and Sunday, January the 19th, 20th, 21st, 26th and 27th, Friday 7:30, Saturday 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. That's Rayod's production, and the box office there is 01794 512 987. I'll say that again, 01794 512 987. A pantomime, lovely. And other items on stage around Winchester is the Theatre Royal. It's a dance project, and it's called Invisible Music, and that's on Thursday, February the 8th, 6:30 and 8:30. Two performances. That's at the Theatre Royal Winchester, and the telephone number is 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. At the Chesil Theatre, Winchester, there are two more performances. That's on Saturday. They're doing Duet for One, which is a very, very good play. And the timing of the matinee is 2:30, and the evening performance is 7:45. The box office there is 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. It's all the threes and all the sixes, isn't it? And one more, a talk, and I think this one is... No, I'm sorry. I am sorry. I have already read that to you, so I'm taking up your time unnecessarily. Well, that's it for what's on. Thank you very much for listening to all of that. And before we go on to the general news, I'll just give you the lighting up times. The times will be on Saturday, the 27th of January. The sun will set at 4:47 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 31st of January, the sun will rise at 7:44 a.m. and will set at 4:54 p.m. We are nearing lighter evenings, which is very good news. And we're going to start off with the general news. And Claire has the first item, please.
This is a warning over Irish notes. Police are warning businesses to be on the lookout for two men who have used counterfeit Irish banknotes to pay for goods in several stores in the Winchester area. The two men with Irish accents entered stores in Kingsworthy and Alresford on Wednesday, January 17th, and bought low-value goods with fake £50 notes, displaying the serial number A383952. Witnesses described the first man as having a shaved head, a nicely shaped beard, and was wearing all black clothing, including a hoodie under his jacket, and Nike trainers with white soles. The second suspect was described as being slightly shorter than the first, with a number 4 grade hairstyle, an untidy beard, and was wearing grey jogging bottoms, a black jacket with black hoodie underneath, and another layer of grey clothing underneath, and Nike trainers with white soles.
150 police jobs set for axe in £7 million cuts. Hampshire Constabulary is poised to axe 100 officers and 50 support staff in new cost-cutting plans. Police chiefs aim to save almost £7 million by imposing a raft of cuts, which include reducing the number of traffic officers by 20 and trimming the size of the dog unit. Critics fear the proposed cuts could increase the danger of terrorism and other serious crimes. John Apter, chairman of the Hampshire Police Federation, which represents rank and file officers, said, "We've already seen the number of police officers slashed across Hampshire Constabulary by almost 1,000. These latest cuts to our specialist teams are yet another blow for policing." The cuts are due to be debated at a meeting of Hampshire's Police and Crime Panel on Friday. Hampshire Constabulary has to save £24 million over the next 4 years following a series of reductions in the annual amount of grants it receives from the government. Mr. Apter said the teams being reduced are critical parts of policing. "The way Hampshire Constabulary is funded by the government is unfair and has created a crisis in policing which is getting worse. We're told by politicians from all parties that we have the best police service in the world. These platitudes stick in the throat when those same politicians stand by and allow the service they praise to be cut to dangerous levels."
Questions answered on care home. Those behind a new care home being built near Winchester have organised information sessions for people to find out more. Brendan Care is holding two meetings to discuss their scheme for a 64-bedroom care home at Otterbourne Hill. The development is set to open in the summer and will provide support for individuals and couples through a range of care services. The plans include 20 apartments designed to support couples living with one partner's diagnosis of dementia, helping them to remain together under one roof. The new care home will offer nursing and dementia care in a family-like environment. Brendan Care Otterbourne Hill will also offer a community hub with different facilities including a restaurant, tea shop and an indoor winter garden. These services will be open to the residents of the care home and the local public. Claire Boyd-Leslie, the customer relations manager for Brendan Care, said, "We hope that anyone interested in finding out more about the services at Otterbourne Hill will be able to come along to one of the events, where there will be further information and a chance to meet members of our team." She added, "We're looking forward to seeing as many people as possible at the events. And you can get more information by calling 01962 857 489.
Anger, as trees roosted in by loved birds are chopped down. Residents have been left furious after a group of trees being roosted in by thousands of starlings were chopped down on Tuesday morning. The trees at Winchester Fire Station in Eastern Lane, Winnell, are home to the birds, which are known to form one of the largest murmurations in Europe. People often travel miles to see the beautiful displays, the birds in flight. The trees were cut down by arboriculturists from Arborcare UK Limited on behalf of Hampshire County Council at short notice on Tuesday morning. It is believed that the trees were cut down following the complaints of the birds defecating on vehicles in nearby car parks. Esme Holding, a resident from Carmen's Lane, Compton, called the felling of the trees underhand and wrong. "We have one of the greatest natural phenomena in Europe on our doorstep, and we just get rid of it. There was no consultation, they just turned up with the van and started cutting them down." An RSPB spokeswoman added, "Instead of looking at ways we can force nature into an ever smaller space, we should look at how we can live alongside wildlife and help give it a home." Defending the decision, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service Facilities Manager Matt Robinson said, "The trees to the rear of Winchester Fire Station have been removed due to the impact they were having on operational vehicles and the health and safety of staff. Hampshire County Council was approached for comment but had not replied at time of going press."
Well, a rather jollier story. New project sees residents young and old brought together. A Winchester care home and nursery have joined forces to launch a new programme to help bring the city's elderly population and children together. Smiling Together, run by St John's Moorside Care Home and the Yellow Dot Nursery, involves a group of children and staff from Yellow Dot Nursery visiting Moorside one afternoon every fortnight. The youngsters spend time with the care home residents, taking part in a range of activities including singing, arts and crafts, games and baking. When the warmer weather begins to arrive, they'll also be engaging in a spot of gardening and enjoying visits from farm animals. St John's Moorside matron and manager Deborah McCartney said, "After the great success of a few taster sessions last year, we've now decided to make this a regular event so that it features within our activities programme. As a respected care provider, we're increasingly seeing the many benefits of bringing children and older people together, and this is especially true in the case of people who are living with dementia. Our residents are thoroughly enjoying the children's visits. They look forward to them coming, and it's wonderful to see how their faces light up as they interact with the children and take part in the activities. We're so grateful to Yellow Dot for helping us make this dream a reality." Yellow Dot Nursery Manager Catherine Jones added, "A key part of the Yellow Dot philosophy is our commitment to providing our children with a rich and varied range of experiences. Smiling Together is a lovely way of building relationships between our youngsters and the older people who live close by. It's a pleasure to see how much the children enjoy mixing with the residents and working together on activities, and also to receive such a warm welcome from everyone at Moorside."
Round Table Offer to help secure tapestry. What do you give to someone when they've presented you with a unique medieval artefact? According to the leader of Hampshire County Council, it should be another unique medieval artefact. The Bayeux Tapestry is set to be displayed in the UK for the first time after France agreed it could leave their shores after 950 years. As previously reported, Councillor Roy Perry has offered to host the historic tapestry in the Great Hall of Winchester Castle after the French President Emmanuel Macron announced it would be loaned to the UK. But Councillor Perry has also suggested in a letter written to Prime Minister Theresa May that in exchange for the priceless item, Hampshire could loan King Arthur's Round Table to our neighbours across the Channel. Councillor Perry said, as a gesture in return, and subject to specialist advice, we could perhaps offer for loan to France King Arthur's Round Table. Actually, our medieval round table was constructed as a replica under the orders of Edward I and painted during the reign of Henry VIII and is displayed in the Great Hall. Speaking about Hampshire's suitability for displaying the biotapestry, he added, the Great Hall of Winchester Castle is the second largest medieval hall in England and would be a very appropriate venue. Winchester was the Anglo-Saxon capital of England at the time of the Norman conquest. Already, ferries cross the Channel daily between Normandy and Hampshire, so it would be easy for French tourists to visit. Described by some as history's first graphic novel, the 230-foot-long embroidery depicts events leading up to the Battle of Hastings and the Norman conquest of England by William the Conqueror in 1066. The arrival of the Normans saw the capital switched from Winchester to London. Although referred to as a tapestry, it is an embroidery stitched in 9 different panels, and it's believed to have been sewn by nuns in Canterbury. King Arthur's Round Table bears the names of the knights of the court and depicts Arthur sitting above a Tudor rose. The location for the display of the biotapestry is due to be decided later this year.
Fire-hit garage plans approved. Plans have been unanimously approved to keep 2 temporary buildings at a Hampshire garage used to store police evidence. Williams Garage in Main Road, Otterbourne, will now keep the buildings that were erected following a blaze at the garage in November 2015. They will be used to store scene-of-crime vehicles, recovered on behalf of Hampshire Constabulary. A nearby resident told Winchester City Council's planning committee that he feared lorry movements to and from the site would be dangerous for children in the area, but councillors were reassured that the planning application would not result in extra vehicle movements. As previously reported, a blaze ripped through the garage's yard, with more than 40 firefighters from across the county tackling the fire. Incident Commander Sean Cheeseman from St Mary's Fire Station said at the time, the fire was that intense that we couldn't get any crews inside. A £60,000 Ford Sierra Cosworth RS500, one of only 500 made, was among the vehicles burnt out in the blaze. It is thought no police evidence was destroyed during the fire.
Go.
Community cafe close to total. Plans for a community cafe at a beauty spot are edging closer as the scheme nears its fundraising target. The proposed Handlebar Cafe, to be built near the Hockley Viaduct and at the foot of St Catherine's Hill in Winchester, has reached 93% of its target of £325,000. The project by Spud Youth, which will provide bike repairs as well as a cup of coffee for visitors, had previously been delayed due to uncertainty over funding. It hit various setbacks, including the discovery of a high-pressure sewage pipe running under the site, as well as a financial shortfall of £125,000. Spud Youth, the group who are behind the project, will own the cafe, but it will be operated by Bespoke Biking. Previously, city councils reaffirmed their commitment to providing £50,000, subject to match funding of £25,000 from the Town Forum.
Fire crews top of medical calls table. Hampshire firefighters attend more than 10,000 medical calls a year, more than any other fire service, new figures show. Trained fire crews stabilise seriously ill or injured people until the ambulance service arrives, potentially saving hundreds of lives. The co-responder partnership between Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, HFRS, and South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, has been running for 13 years and accounts for 40% of all co-responder calls across the UK. It has since been rolled out by other fire and rescue services. There are currently 19 co-responder vehicles operating from 22 on-call fire stations, and in the past 3 years, the HFRS has attended 31,806 medical calls. All Hampshire firefighters have been trained in immediate emergency care to enable them to respond to medical incidents. Station manager Dave Hayborn said, "This is partnership working at its very best. Our co-responders have saved many, many lives in conjunction with SCAS during the past 13 years. The special work our co-responders do helps build even greater trust and mutual respect between our two organisations." Councillor Chris Carter, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority Chairman, added, "It's this kind of innovation and pioneering work that helps keep the people of Hampshire safe while giving the public the best possible value for money. It's gratifying to see other services looking to us and taking our ideas and successes back to their drill yards."
And lastly, a sad little tale of misbehaviour. A Winchester man has received a criminal behaviour order to cut out his chronic poor behaviour. Magistrates in Basingstoke agreed the CBO for 5 years against Adam Peary, 41, now of no fixed abode. Police applied for the order and the court heard Peary had recently received a conviction for assault, shoplifting, 3 counts of racially aggravated harassment and twice urinating in public. Peary must now no longer act in an aggressive and antisocial way in Winchester, drink in public, or beg for money.
Thank you very much, Claire, and everybody. So that's the end of the general news and our extracts for you this week from the Hampshire Chronicle. So we have to say thank you to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of the edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, many thanks to our readers. Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick into the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Thank you very much for listening. Have a good week and we look forward to being here for you next time. Goodbye.